You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off.
Viewers, I hope you enjoyed the balloons. Mitch brought them in today.
You're welcome.
Assassin's Creed 3 sold a few copies.
How many, Damon?
A few 7 million copies.
What?
Okay.
7 million.
That is a big number.
I'm glad we had the same reaction.
Ubisoft says it's the fastest selling game in the company's history.
Aren't they always?
What?
Just, I feel just like that's what we hear every time. There's like,
it's because that
anytime
franchise
anything sells,
7 million is a lot.
I'm not saying it's not true. That's ridiculous. That's huge.
Right. Let's you know, for a little comparison, PlayStation All Stars Battle Royale.
I've heard of that. I think
was a very popular game on IGN all throughout this year, just like Assassin's Creed 3 was. That Sony will not release exact numbers.
It didn't even chart.
We're talking sub 200,000 copies worldwide.
Hotline Miami sold 130,000 copies.
Yeah. Buy Hotline Miami, it's so good.
Yeah. It's also not $60 to be
fair. That's true.
The Assassin's Creed games just keep getting bigger and bigger. Everyone knew this one was gonna be huge because it brings things to America. And not that people, you know, are like, I was super interested in Renaissance Italy, right?
Just, we brought this thing to America.
Yeah, it's true. And it's working out well. 7 million Mitches on the way.
it's surprising. I guess, you know, it's a very, very big franchise. Sequels always sell, you know.
I mean, my thing is, you know, again, since this does bring brings thing to America now,
nope.
Like we kind of...
Oh, no!
I also wanted to cross my legs. There we go. We're good. Everything's fine.
We knew this one was going to be huge over here for that reason. Like the American Revolution, that's really interesting. There's been lots and lots of rumors. We hear about Assassin's Creed in Brazil, Assassin's Creed in, you know, Japan. Would those games sell as well?
Well, the other thing that's interesting about this is that none of us are that crazy about Assassin's
Creed
3.
Yeah, you know, the people in this room, like, obviously plenty of people love that game.
But this room and, like,
there
know,
was enthusiasm
our,
in this
our
room.
Colleagues, you know, in the industry. Like,
I don't know one person that can tell me that they absolutely love that game right up until the ending and everything. Most people are like, I had some fun with it, but then it totally fell apart.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't get sevens and it didn't get tens.
It's not really on any game of the year lists.
That's the thing.
It's not on any game of the year lists.
That kind of blows my mind. Like, that is not at all what I expected. Because having seen that game at E3, we were all blown away. We're like, holy crap.
Yeah.
This looks incredible.
Did we name it Game of the Show? I don't remember.
No,
we did not.
Tomb Raider.
Mm-hmm. Right. But Assassin's Creed was definitely in that conversation.
It definitely got nominations for best action game and best, you know, platform 360 and PS3 and stuff like that. But yeah, when it came down to discussions for Game of the Year, no one said anything, not even for soundtrack or anything like that. It didn't even fall into some weird category.
The soundtrack was disappointing, man.
Even the soundtrack was disappointing.
Ubisoft just put out another game recently with 3 in the title, it's so much better. Far Cry 3 is so awesome.
How crazy is it that people don't care about Far Cry until Far Cry comes out, and it's like, what is this game? Yeah.
Mitch is so happy.
Me too. I've never been more excited to see people in our office as thrilled with a game as they are with this.
You realize that I said Mitch is so happy, and you said me too.
That's pretty cool.
There are 7 million Mitches.
just because you, I know you're like the world's biggest Far Cry 2 fan, and that game people love to hate on Far Cry 2. And now it's like everyone, you're like, yes, welcome, brothers.
Well, because now, I mean, Far Cry 3 fixes so much of what Far Cry 2 did wrong.
And I did not like Far Cry 2 at all, and I love Far Cry 3. So if you were in a position where you didn't like 2, yeah, I mean.
I've been going, every night for the past week, I've been going home just playing Far Cry 3 all night.
Making wallets.
Yeah. So great. And then you're like, oh, I don't have, I need to get one more shark skin.
I gotta find a Taper.
All right, shark.
Need to go find a goat.
Yeah.
I could, skin a goat.
My big thing was I couldn't find Tapers for a long time.
There's like one spot in the whole world where Tapers exist.
Moving on. We've also spotted a listing on Amazon for an Hitman Trilogy HD. Now, there was a Hitman Trilogy released back in 2007. It was not an HD, though. So this one looks like it'll include Hitman Contracts, Hitman 2 Silent Assassin, and Hitman Blood Money. Interesting thing about that, Hitman Blood Money was already released on Xbox 360 as a current-gen game. It's already in HD.
Mm. Correct.
But, oh well.
It's interesting that we're...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I just think it's weird that they'd be
that's
like...
That's odd. The end.
Well, it probably says for the first time in HD, mostly, on the box, you know?
Two out of three.
Ain't bad. Yep, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time we've seen Contracts in this collection, too, I think, because when they released the last collection, for some, I think it was maybe like a publishing thing, Contracts wasn't released in that HD bundle.
No, doesn't Contracts include most of the original Hitman? Isn't that how it works?
Maybe?
I don't know.
That's how I understand, but I
HD collections are very strange to me because a lot of times they dress them up and they look very pretty, but they obviously still play like very archaic games.
Yeah, it's like you go back, you're like, Jack and Daxter, then you're like, oh.
Yeah, you're like,
remember when this
man,
was the best one?
The save system screwed up, or like, you know, the level progression's borked, or the camera's a mess, but everything's pretty and shiny now.
Not as fun as I remember. I'm playing through Vice City on iOS right now. That game is only 10 years old. Like, that's it. It came out 10 years ago, and like, there is, like, I mean, the game's fun. It's a totally great port, but the actual game itself, like, I can't believe that 10 years ago, we're like, oh man, they nailed 80s Miami. Yep. The atmosphere is so perfect. Like, it's this blocky, boxy, empty city. Like,
stuff is pink, I guess.
Yeah.
All the mission designs, like, tail this car for 3 days. And you're like, all right.
And then
and 10 years later, you're doing that in Assassin's Creed 3.
Yeah. I don't know why that still happens. 7 million copies.
So, Hitman Trilogy HD is on Amazon. They have box art. There's a release date, January 29th, 2013. And there's a price of $40. But Square Enix has not announced it. IGN reaches out to Square Enix for confirmation. They give us that line, we cannot comment on rumor and speculation.
Speculation, it's on the internet! It's for sale, okay. I can buy it!
Yeah, I could pre-order this right now and you're gonna say to me it's a rumor that this is coming? Come on.
It'll arrive at my doorstep and they'll announce it.
It's true. The other thing I want to talk about today is this interesting company where I'm hearing about called Green Throttle. I know I've talked to Justin about it. Have you guys heard about Green Throttle?
I'm unfamiliar.
You are aware of Ouya.
Yes.
Right? This console.
Ouya.
Supposed to come out next year.
That was a boot up noise.
Was it?
Yeah. Yep.
Is it really?
You guys didn't hear that?
Wait.
Oh, it's really funny. We'll have to play it after this.
It's kind of like the Sega. It's just like some dude going, Ouya.
It's like,
it sounds like the Crash Bandicoot guy.
And it's a real thing?
It does.
And it's a real thing?
Yeah, that's their boot up noise.
Okay.
Really?
Anyway.
Yeah.
I believe you. I mean, I'm just surprised.
Yeah.
It's fine, Brian. We'll never know what that sounds like.
Well, can we, I'm going to have the best boot up noise, GameCube. I'm going to go ahead and say it.
It's so cheerful.
It's just like a wooden block.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Broom.
And you can change it.
If you hold the button, it sounds even more baby.
Hold R to baby.
So, Green Throttle's idea is sort of like Ouya, except their idea is that you already have a console in your pocket with your phone. So what they're going to do is sell hardware in the form of a controller and a TV adapter, and then there is an app for your phone. So you just plug your phone into your TV, and then you boot up their app, and then that's your like console experience.
So cool idea.
Pause. So
that, yeah.
I need three things to play my iPhone games, which I can just do.
Yes, but they're idea is that, you know, this is a small screen. It's a personal experience.
Yeah. The devices are really, really powerful now.
Yeah. Sure.
This thing, is this Android only or iPhone?
Android is what I've heard so far.
Okay, but I mean, the iPad 3 and iPad 4, the screen resolution on those is higher than an HD television.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you have a HD out and then you have a controller in your hand, your device basically is a game console at that point, if there's games that support
acceptable.
It. That's Green Throttle's idea. Okay. So the controller pairs with your phone via Bluetooth, and then you plug your phone into your TV to have
it. The controller is this. Looks just like an Xbox controller, right?
Yep. Yep. Wow. Right down to the colors. Like,
yeah.
The color scheme, the offset, the analog sticks.
See, Mitch, you say you need three things for this, but the way I see it, and they probably see it, is that you already have two out of three of those things.
Yeah. The phone and the TV?
Yeah.
I mean, then I need the controller, the app, and wasn't there another thing?
Well, the connector.
And I looked on their website. It's like $45 for the, you know, everything you need to get going.
Yeah.
It's a cool idea. It's just like any other console. The games need to be there.
Yeah,
yeah, that's the thing. Like what? Like, yeah.
Like there are good console quality mobile games, but they don't just work with a controller out of the box. Like they really need to work hard to get, you know, AAA companies on board. Like I played Final Fantasy Dimensions, for example, and that would be a no-brainer if they were to work out D-pad support in that game.
Like, personally, like the kind of mobile games I like, and I love mobile gaming, but I love mobile gaming for the stuff that other platforms can't do. Something like Super Hexagon, which obviously is on PC now, so
yeah,
it's
that's
kind
a
of
bad example.
But I mean, that's how I experienced that first. Was I was sitting on train in the morning, just playing Super Hexagon and on the plane and stuff like that. Things that are unique to mobile, or at least feel kind of unique to mobile, that I wouldn't get on my 360. Turning it into a home console is not how I want to experience those games.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to agree. You know, I reviewed Modern Combat 4. That game looks great. You know, it's fully voice acted. The campaign feels like Call of Duty. It's got free online multiplayer. That game sucks. Kind of. Well, it doesn't suck. I gave it a... It's okay. I gave it a...
The fourth bullet point on the box.
Yeah.
I gave it a positive review because Gameloft did the best that they could with a touchscreen.
Yeah.
But, I'm tired of seeing these games that just take what works on a console and throw it on mobile. Like,
right,
you need
like
to build
at that
stuff
point,
from the ground
why
up
am I,
on mobile.
Why am I not just playing Call of Duty?
But that game, like games like that, are perfect. Like, that's what this, you know, they
sure.
need to get in touch with Gameloft.
Right? Sure, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the other big thing is we already have devices like this. Like, this is the MOGA controller. Our tech editor, Nick Vargas, gave it a 7.9. This is an Android controller. And
show the cradle.
Yeah, the cradle part I think is a little bit janky. Like, it's got this cradle that flips out, and you put your device in here, and then, you know, it's a controller. It pairs via Bluetooth. It's got two analog controls.
It's pretty comfy, too.
Yeah, it's pretty comfy.
Despite being tiny, but...
The MOGA's really slick, and so these guys are doing something a little bit different with, like, the TV out and trying to make your mobile hardware a true console, but, like, we're getting closer and closer to, like, a really solid, really great controls, you know, digital controls for mobile games already, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think like the real game changer would be if Apple themselves.
This is it.
We're
right?
just like, this is our controller. It's optional. It works with every game on our store. We make that mandatory for people coding games for our platform.
Yeah.
I mean, it would obviously not retroactively work with the 14 billion apps on there already.
But I also kind of have a problem with that because some games that are built with touch in mind are like super fun and wouldn't work with like other controls.
So keep the touch. Like that interface is not going away. This
but
is
you
only...
said they have to use a controller.
Well, I mean, it's an optional
it's
thing.
An option.
Like if you have something like Modern Combat, you can play with touch controls if you're stupid. Or you can play with this thing.
Well, I mean, if it's Apple's...
Hey, idiots.
Like, cut the rope, yes.
Yeah.
Keep it the way it is. You know, like that doesn't need dual analog joystick support.
The big problem with any controller is getting the software to support it.
Right.
Like, on mobile, you know, just like any hardware, the big problem with the Wii U is getting developers on board,
sure.
right? And so if it were an Apple product, look, this is going to be in all the Apple stores, we're going to push it hard, we're going to announce it at our press conference, like... There'd be no problem. No problem getting developers
I honestly
on board.
Think the biggest barrier here is, like, Apple's pride itself.
Yep.
And them saying, we have this one-touch interface that it's everything you'll ever need to do anything. You can browse the web, you can send emails, you can get photos, you can play every game in the world. And they have to be like, and here's 16 more buttons for it, plus some joysticks. That's like, it's a pride thing that I don't think I see them stepping away from. Because all of their advertising and branding is about the simplicity of this white dude's finger going in and going over a nice shiny screen and everything working perfectly. And now they're like, oh, well, and it also plays, you know, Halo. And all this other shit. But that's a matter of them just going, you know, we're tucking our tail a little bit in this one. Here, now we're going to take over the world of video games.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all they have to do.
I don't know. I'm of two minds. Like, sometimes I'm like, Apple, you're so stupid. Release a controller. Like, you would crush the Game Boy and crush all this stuff. But on the other hand, they're kind
of... Finally, the Game Boy is going down.
But, like, they're already doing that. right? Like, they're already winning.
A little bit.
That from their perspective, why in the world would they release some device that, you know, there's 100 million iPads out there, and how many people want the controller? Like, I would love it. I would absolutely die to get my hands on one. But, like, how big is that audience versus how many people have iPod Touches and iPads? Like...
So Gamasutra has put up a couple interesting articles. One is the five biggest surprises in video games of 2012. The other is the five biggest disappointments. I thought it'd be good to go through the list here.
Sure.
See what we think about them. Some interesting things on here. Surprises first. Five biggest surprises in video games in 2012. Number one, Double Fine starts the Kickstarter revolution.
That's true.
This was... There were lots of Kickstarter. We heard about Kickstarter a lot this year.
Yeah, and there were gaming Kickstarters before the Double Fine one, but the Double Fine one was the first one to be like millions of dollars past funding.
It was the first really high-profile one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think they made $3.3 million. And what is that game that we make? Do we even know what
it's an adventure game. They've released some screenshots at this point and some art. And it's a point-and-click adventure game. Classic type of stuff that, you know, Ron Gilbert and the people there would have done, you know. Back in the day.
And then there's Ouya, which is the most funded video game thing on Kickstarter, I think.
I'm supposed to be getting one of those in March.
Oh, you bought it. You funded it.
No, I'm kidding.
You funded it?
Yeah, I did.
Nice.
I just wanted a doorstop.
It was a weird year for Kickstarter stuff, right? Like, I mean, I feel like it started off and then it kind of peaked. It was this big arc. We heard about it like crazy. And then I feel like now we're hearing more of the bad stories.
Well, one of the bad stories.
There was one a few weeks ago. There was a Kickstarter project that was $28 short of being funded.
Oh, I didn't hear about that. That's terrible.
Which is pathetic.
No, like, but surely they can just like, well, I'll just throw it.
Right? If we were all sitting here, they're like, they're gonna burn down the rec center, but we pull in $6 each or whatever. Then the other one is there was another company that spent all of their Kickstarter money on just other garbage.
Oh, so everyone just lost their money.
Yeah, so there's a lawsuit now and everything. So
this reminds me.
You have a strong stance on Kickstarter.
So I was gonna say this reminds me of when we were sitting around when Double Fine's Kickstarter first came out. We do our morning meeting, and I'm like, this Kickstarter thing is dumb. and everyone's like, what? You were one of them. Alatano was one of them. He's like, yeah, you know, everyone call me crazy or whatever. And I'm like, this is what's gonna happen with Kickstarter. It's gonna be this really cool thing. Some games are gonna come out. Eventually, games won't come out. Things won't get funded. People are gonna abscond with the money, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Sure.
And lo and behold, we're hearing those kinds of stories on a regular basis.
I go into every Kickstarter knowing that it's a risk, potentially. But that being said, I've had positive experiences with Kickstarter. I've funded a couple of bands' albums. I've funded a couple of games. I have the playable alphas for some of the games that I've played and funded. So
we funded a little podcast.
I'm fairly confident that it'll...
But you can't just say, this Kickstarter thing's going to be... That's like, these people are going to be bad. Yes, most of them will, but there might be some good people.
I agree with you. I think that there's
bad
eggs. There's some indie games that are cool, and, you know, like the records that are being made, board games, there's a lot of, like, you know, tabletop RPGs that are being made, which is cool. But what really frustrates me, there's one thing that's being funded right now, or maybe it just ended with Sony's, like, PlayStation Move... Sebastian Joust game or whatever.
Oh, Johann Sebastian.
Yeah,
Johann Sebastian.
And I'm like, Sony keeps...
Sports friends.
What really annoys me is when big companies get in on this. You know, because it's like, you're a big company, fund it yourself. Like, why is Sony writing PlayStation blog entries and tweeting about this game? If you believe in it that much, which you clearly don't because you won't fund it yourself, then fund it yourself.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that Kickstarter is cool, but also pie in the sky in a way. Like, you need to have capitalists, you need to have money, and publishers have money.
Yeah, I think some people that I've talked to that have been part of Kickstarters definitely were doing it because they knew that doing a Kickstarter, if they could reach their goal, would show enough interest that the investors would come.
Yeah.
Like, they knew that they weren't going to be able to fund it with just the Kickstarter.
If you really want to paint a fair picture here, it's not the Kickstarters that have been successfully funded. If you Google, there's like a blog full of failed Kickstarters.
Oh, yeah.
You go look at those and be like, all right, I have some faith here. Because it's not like every single one is like, we got this idea for this dumb game and we need $1 million. People are like, fuck off. And for the most part, people said fuck off to a lot of really
Last I checked, Peter Molyneux's Kickstarter still isn't funded.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, why is a guy like that, one of the most prolific game designers of all time, how does he even have the audacity, the audacity to go to people and be like, I need your money to make my game? It's like, dude, you're Peter Molyneux. I'm pretty sure you can go to a publisher and get that money.
Right.
I just think people, you know, more power to you.
Dude, it's not that black and white, though. That's like, people go, you're IGN, don't you have billions of dollars? And we're like, no. Like, you know, we got these, posters up for 2 years. They're all crooked and shit. You know, we got scuff marks. This table used to break all the time. I mean,
no one's ever swept the studio either. I don't think ever.
No, never once.
No, never once.
We've gotten through one of 10.
Okay. So, number two most surprising thing of 2012, Steam's greenlight process opens the submission floodgates.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. And we've seen some Steam light greenlight games actually go up, although it's still not entirely. Like open at this point, like it's not like the top like voted games definitely get greenlit. It's like they vote on them and then the people at Valve will be like, add this one.
And well, so like Valve was like, we're getting too many game submissions. We can't do this. It's taking up too much of our time, right?
Sure, and especially from a bunch of indie games, right, where it's like, is the game even done? Is it up to snuff? Is this something the community is even gonna want?
What is the, explain this because I don't know anything about this.
It's just like a community voting process where I could go up right now and be like, I've created this indie game. I would love it to be distributed on Steam. Here's a trailer or some screenshots. Vote for it. And so then people vote and they're like, I would love to see this on Steam. And eventually Valve, it might take notice and be like, all right, we're going to give this person a publishing deal on Steam.
And then they have to QA and still on stuff themselves. It's not like a group thing where they play the game and find the problems.
No.
But it used to be if you had a game, you just went through Valve.
Yeah.
You submitted the game to Valve, basically.
Right.
Interesting. And that's a cool idea.
Yeah. And so this allows them to see that there already is interest in a product and get it out on Steam.
Smart. Yeah. They know how to make money over there.
They do.
Lots of it.
They
good for them.
Do.
They're really good at it. Well, they make good games. Number three, Zynga buys, the way they word it, Zynga fills its mobile hole for $180 million. They bought OMG Pop, the developer of Draw Something, for $180 million.
That was a mistake.
I know, right? Remember Draw Something? Everybody played that for like five minutes.
Yeah,
and then it was over. A lot of mobile games are like that. They're like, oh my god, this is amazing.
Well, those guys left all the way to the bank.
Well, yeah. From the time they put it out to the time Zynga paid them $180 million was 6 weeks. It happened really, really fast.
I mean, I guess if they can strike lightning, or lightning can strike twice for them, like maybe that your investment would be worth it, but it certainly wasn't for Draw Something.
Well, yeah, I mean, this has been a bad year for Zynga. It's kind of over for Zynga at this point, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I just think that we're seeing generally in this kind of game space, in the electronic space and stuff, just overvaluation of a lot of things. Hmm. We were talking about that program Yammer.
Yeah.
Like that was that Microsoft bought for like $3 billion. It's like, you know, or like whatever outrageous amount. Yeah, it was like an outrageous amount of money. It's like when Yahoo bought GeoCities for like $5 billion in 1999. It's like, that's the sure sign that there's going to be a bubble burst.
Now, number four, Colin, is Sony buys cloud gaming platform Gaikai.
Yeah, that's a huge acquisition. Now, I don't think what people realize about this acquisition is Sony wouldn't make an investment like this if they weren't positive that it was going to, because it was like $300-something million to buy Gaikai. So they have no money.
$380 million.
Yeah, $380 million. So Gaikai is going to be integral in the new PlayStation. I think that's pretty obvious.
Maybe Yammer is going to be integral in the new
new Xbox.
The new Xbox.
Yammering
Far
Cry 4.
So I just think that Gaikai acquisition was, you know, consider this. Sony shut down three of its studios this year after never shutting down any studios in from 1994 to now, except for one, Incognito. They shut down three this year because they're like hemorrhaging money, but they still spent almost $400 million on Gaikai. So
yeah.
So they know what's going on, and I think that it's going to be that the new PlayStation has basically ubiquitous cloud use with games, and then you probably just buy digital versions.
Well, they saved a lot of money by not advertising the Vita.
Mm-hmm. They save a lot of money by not advertising anything at all.
That's true.
Except for Call of Duty on Vita, and I don't know why anyone would want to buy that garbage.
There's some ads for a PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale.
Yeah, that never show the game.
Yeah, that's what I don't
like. Yeah, rough. Now you think about it.
Oh, it's this guy fighting this burlap sack. It's like no one knows who these characters are. I mean, I love those characters, but no one knows who the hell Nathan Drake is.
No.
You gotta love him.
Number five, The Walking Dead redefines adventure games.
Ah, fantastic.
We got a great time.
Yeah, although I don't know if I'd put that on my top five surprises. I feel like Telltale's been bringing back adventure games for a while.
But none of them has been as big as Walking Dead, right?
I agree, but they've already proven that they can do episodic adventure games successfully.
Yeah, but consider that Back to the Future, like Greg and I were talking about this, like Back to the Future is not really very good. Mm-hmm. You know, and Jurassic Park, by all accounts, is even worse. Yeah. So like, I think the big surprise is not that Telltale is going to do an adventure game, is that, when I turned this game on, I was kind of skeptical, you know? Mm-hmm. I played them all one day. I waited until episode 5 came out, and then I played them all like the day before Thanksgiving. And I was absolutely blown away by The Walking Dead. Yep. The game plays not great, but well. There's a few like hiccups where like it becomes very gamey and you can't really play it.
Sure.
But the story's riveting, the characters are riveting, it's just very emotional. Great.
And like a year ago, Anthony, like would you have believed that we'd be talking about, you know, Telltale's episodic series as, you know, Game of the Year potential?
That there would be a whole like spectacle on TV for the VGAs and everything, that those guys would be on the red carpet and stuff.
I would
like
say that I would, but most people wouldn't, because I love adventure games. But I would, but I wouldn't think they could have made an adventure game that would have appealed to so many people. Yeah. So I guess that is. Right.
And I think it transcends the license. It's not just like, oh, that popular TV show everyone likes is a cool, fun adventure game. No, like that, the game is better than the show. Like the game is really good. And there's a lot of people who've never played a game like that before.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, in the last, like me, I haven't played an adventure game in years. Mm. And I sat down and I loved The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And that's a huge success right there. And that's a small team of people.
Anybody has
going up against,
it, though,
you know, Call of Duty and Borderlands and Halo and stuff like that.
They should know the game is not based off the show. Comic. Sure. Same continuity as the comic, not the same continuity as the show.
But I think Altano hit on something really interesting, which is that it feels and looks a lot like the show. I mean, obviously not the same fidelity. But what's cool is, like, when I watch the show and they're, like, in an abandoned building or whatever, and I'm like, you know, look in that cabinet. You know, look in that cabinet. And they just kind of ignored everyone. In this game, like, you can go through the minutia and search the empty drawers and do it. I don't know. There was just something special about that game where I was like, I really just like doing all the little things, you know, taking my time and
What I appreciated about that game, and it's something I was thinking about today, because Wind Waker turned 10 years old today.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, you know, that game still looks beautiful. And like The Walking Dead, I think, is still going to look pretty great in a few years, just because they picked this art style and they kind of stuck with it, you know? And I don't know if Call of Duty is going to look that great in a few years. Borderlands might, but I mean, just The Walking Dead is being like, here's...
So you're excel shading.
It ages better than like Twilight Princess.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Right? Like, absolutely. Oh, yeah. No question.
We're all the Wind Waker haters now. Remember all the Wind Waker haters back in 2003? Yep. Oh, they were so wrong then. Mm-hmm. They're so wrong now.
They're begging for an HD remake now.
I'll say something potentially controversial. Wind Waker, the last great Zelda game.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah, I could give you that.
Agreed.
All right, those are the biggest surprises Gamma Sutra picked. Here are the five biggest disappointments of 2012.
Here we go.
Number one, Star Wars The Old Republic.
I mean, it was a good game. It was a very good game. It was an excellent game, even, I think. But, I mean, I guess it was a disappointment for EA.
Yeah, what happened with that game, though?
Subscription-based MMOs are dead, man. Unless you're Blizzard. So and even Blizzard.
They spent a long time developing it. Like, they started developing it.
That was the other thing,
By the time it was released, the model has changed.
When I went and saw that game for the very first time at the announcement, I think I was still, like, an intern. I had just gotten started, like, 5 years ago. You know, and the fact that it just came out, like, this much farther along, like... The game came out and it was already behind. That was the biggest problem with it, right? Was that it, you know, it's like when EA released Origin or when this came out, you cannot release and be like, all right, we're out and we're going to catch up to our competitors. No, you have to release on par with your competitors to compete and then get ahead of them. Like, they were like trying to play catch up for a month. They weren't even as good as like a World of Warcraft, which had been out for years when they launched. And it was just obvious that, like, you know, it has the Star Wars license. It's a really cool game. But, like, people do not want to pay $15 a month. The value proposition for MMOs has changed.
Well, I remember when I was talking to people like you, especially, you burned through a lot of the story in that game.
Yeah, I bet.
And people were just like, we want more. And it's like, you got 150 hours of, like, original new Star Wars story, and, like, we want more. It's like, well, like, if you look at, like, The Walking Dead, like, we had Dave Fennoy here at IGN, and he was talking about how he had, like, the script had 12,000 lines in it. You know, and it's just like, that's just a small team of people working on a game that was 5 hours long. I can't imagine what it took to make a game like Star Wars The Old Republic, you know, when they're trying to satiate all these Star Wars fans at the same time.
Gotta have a lot of Twi'leks in there.
Yeah.
It was a long time in development. It might be the most expensive game ever made.
Possibly,
you know, for, like, all the time that was
put
into it.
Quite possibly,
like,
And the release timing of it was weird, right? It was, like, right before Christmas.
Yeah, right before Christmas, I remember that.
Yeah.
Do we know how much it cost to make and how much money they made?
I think it cost something like $350 million to make.
Yeah, but, like, you know, they sold X amount of copies. It's a $50 game? $60
game? Yeah, it was $50.
You have to buy it and then subscribe to it.
Yeah, yeah, that was the original model. At this point, it's free to play. Yeah.
But,
right?
Like, so, I don't think numbers have jumped up drastically, have they?
No, not enough that they've been like, oh, we're back.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Interesting.
I'd say it's in trouble. I'd say any MMO at this point is in a bad way.
Yeah.
Unless you're World of Warcraft.
What about Guild Wars 2?
Guild Wars is okay. Yeah, they're probably doing okay, I was about to say.
Number two disappointment, PlayStation Vita.
Yeah, disappointment for Sony, maybe. Not a disappointment
for me.
Not like
the console's me. Bad, but like...
No,
it's a great really piece good, of hardware.
It really is. Really
I will say Vita. That the amount of games on there that I've wanted to play have been a little lacking. Like, and maybe it's Sony's messaging or whatnot, but it doesn't feel like there's anything coming out. Even though I know there are things that come out, it doesn't feel like here's your first year of your new console. There should be a crap ton of stuff coming.
No, I agree.
And a crap ton of stuff on the horizon, and I feel like I'm like waiting still.
There's nothing, nothing there. There's no announced Final Fantasy game coming to Vita.
Like, Final Fantasy X was announced 2 years ago, but we have never seen it.
So. 10 for Vita?
Yeah,
so
like
was
10
Bioshock,
HD.
Bioshock, and we
yeah, I mean, they remember at TGS 2 years ago, they were like, Final Fantasy X HD is coming to PS3 and Vita, and then later they admitted that like, they never even started working on it.
Yeah.
So, like... I think what people have to understand with the Vita, Greg and I talk about this a lot because this is what all we talk about is PlayStation because we have nothing better to do, is I think that there's a few interesting things about the Vita. Part of why I think the Vita is failing is because I think the handheld market generally is over. I think Nintendo probably has it. I think even if Nintendo released a handheld in 5 years, I think it would struggle. Being a PlayStation fan, and we've all had PlayStation consoles, whatever, means different things than being a Nintendo fan, where it's like you have kind of this association with Mario and Zelda and all these things. Like, a lot of the association we have with PlayStation are things that are older, and PS3 was kind of a rough start, had a rough start, whatever, so which I think tarnished the PlayStation name quite a bit. But I think Sony's not concerned about Vita because I still believe that Vita has some sort of functionality with the new console. And I think that the reason that they're not necessarily, it won't connect, I mean, it's not powerful enough to do what the PS4 does, but maybe some sort of remote play capability, some sort of second screen or whatever, where they kind of realize, like, we can get the Vita out now, let's see how it does, and we won't really worry about it because we're going to push it again when we announce this new console, and maybe they're even going to come together. I mean, Greg and I think about all these kind, we talk about all these kinds of crazy ideas. The other thing is that, you know, the Vita looks totally devoid of titles next year. And other than Tearaway and Killzone and Soul Sacrifice, I mean, you'd be really hard-pressed to think of one game that comes out next year. So it's certainly in trouble.
Yeah, so Gamma Sutra actually has a really good line here. Call of Duty Black Ops 2 Declassified came out recently. It was pretty bad, right?
Yeah, it's really bad.
Their line is, with Call of Duty all but assuredly a failure, the Vita's outlook for 2013 is extremely muted. What Western publisher will touch a system that Call of Duty can't save? It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's good. I mean,
really good.
Yeah.
The problem go. I mean, the problem with Call of Duty goes so much deeper because it, you know, we don't really know the story, right, behind like what happened with Call of Duty. We know it was announced before Vita came out at E3 2 years ago. But we also know that the developer that made it made a bad shooter in Resistance Burning Skies, and then somehow in 6 to 8 months made another shooter that's just as bad as Resistance Burning Skies. Like, what do you expect? Like,
we don't know the story, but it's an age-old tale, right? Like, small group of people gets a licensed property that they have to shit out within 2 or 3 months, and result is terrible. Welcome to the video game industry. It's every movie-based title, TV-based title, everything ever made that's had, like, this is all we got, and this is the amount of time you have to make it. It's crap. No one makes a game of that, you know, magnitude in 2 or 3 months or 6 months or something like that.
No. And what's really sad, what the saddest part, I think, is that if they put the amount of time into it and just said, you know, let's just delay it a year. You know, and get someone, you know, get one of their internal studios to work on it, Raven or someone like that, or Neversoft. Get one of these guys to work on the game, give it the proper love, and then that could sell Vitas and Call of Duties on Vita for years to come. But now that you put your foot out with this game, people are like, well... forget that. You know, it's the same thing with this.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the best Call of Duty game ever made couldn't save the Vita or the 3DS, because I don't think that's what the type of experience people want on handhelds anymore. It's what, like, when people pull out their phones and they play a game real quick. People like you and me are different, right? Like, I'll sit down and play a full-fledged Resident Evil game on a 3DS or a Vita or a PSP and really enjoy it and be like, this is console quality being on my couch. But I think most people just want that on their televisions, and when they're on the go, they want something quick.
I mean, that hits on a perfect note, which is perhaps the Vita is just too little too late.
Yeah.
You know, and it certainly was in development for a long time. So.
Yeah.
Maybe just too late, because I don't think it's too little. Cause it, like we were saying, it's a great piece of
It is the handheld I always wanted.
Yeah. It really is.
It is like so, I mean, I say it, people get mad at me, and I don't mean it as really a slight to the 3DS, because the 3DS is a fine piece of hardware with fine games, whatever, and I own one, but it makes the 3DS look so bad. Like, when you just put the games on next to each other, you look at their functionality next to each other, but what really matters are the games, and, you know, 3DS has the games that people want.
That's true. All right, disappointment number three, E3. Their argument just being that it's sort of loud, tacky, and increasingly irrelevant, especially compared to shows that are thriving like PAX that just gets bigger and bigger every year, and there's a lot. There's a really positive
vibe
around PAX.
Yeah, I mean, to me, when we go to E3 now, it's like when people are like, "Well, at least you get to go to the press conference." I'm like, "I don't. I watch them in a room on." Mm-hmm. Like at this point, you don't need to go to E3 to see the best parts because the best parts of the press conferences and you can stream those. They're all streams.
So yeah, you don't have to read a live blog anymore like we did in 2000 or 2001 or whatever. I think that E3 has always been loud and tacky.
True.
Yes. But maybe increasingly irrelevant. Sure, but I don't know that last year's E3 was weird. For instance, we saw a game that was clearly next gen in Watch Dogs that like they can't say is next gen because the consoles aren't announced yet. So everyone's in this weird hibernation period where they're like, we want to show you things, but we really kind of can't. We're gonna show you the same thing with Phantom Pain. We saw VGAs, like that's clearly, even though it says PS3 and Xbox on the website, like that looks like a pretty game. Like maybe that's running on next gen hardware. They just can't put their cards on the table yet. And I actually have some faith in E3, in E3 this year. They kind of go in cycles. If you've been to enough of them, we all have. Some are really great, some are really bad, some are in the middle, and I think that we're gonna get a pretty good one this year.
If we don't get next gen stuff at this year's, people will call it the worst E3 of all time.
But there'll be next gen.
The expectations for this E3 and the last E3 and everyone before it are insurmountably through the roof, more than they ever should be. I think that is kind of curbing that before you go into any of these things. But I also think, like you say, PAX gets bigger and bigger. It is, but I have a feeling that like that show will once again bubble up to E3 size and then become irrelevant as well, because I think that the future is not publishers playing by those rules. It's them setting up their own events. It's them having their own streams, their own sites. Like, Valve doesn't show up. Rockstar doesn't show up. There are companies that Nintendo barely shows up. There are companies that just play by their own rules these days, and they can just say one day, hey, we're going to put out a trailer for our game. We don't care about E3. And I think that's the future, is all these kind of like micro events and smaller things. And having everyone under one roof and some big, bloated, expensive thing is not the answer.
It used to be the big deal because it was the one time a year you'd have journalists from all over the world in one spot. But nowadays, that's not necessarily needed, and you're right. Why sacrifice your game's FaceTime with a bunch of other big profile games when you could do something on your own?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and still right about
I also think about, it was only a couple years ago that the three of us went, to Gamescom. And, it could be argued that Gamescom is becoming much more important.
Gamescom is five times as big as E3.
Yeah. And it's a consumer show, so people kind of look at it as like, well, it's not really, it's open to the public. But, we were there. Gamescom's a big deal. And I think, as Europe's not a burgeoning market, it is a huge market for video games. And I think that if anything, Gamescom, trounces E3 in the next couple of years in terms of studios showing things off there and stuff. Certainly PlayStation's much more important in Europe, for instance, than North America.
Yeah, for sure. Disappointment number four, Steam Greenlight.
They put it as one of their surprises and disappointments.
Well, surprise isn't necessarily like a positive.
Their
comment being that it turns getting games onto Steam into a popularity contest, and what's popular isn't necessarily great.
That's true, but the alternative is that maybe none of these games would ever end up, or a much smaller grouping of them would ever end up on Steam because Valve wouldn't give them the time of day or something. That being said, there are still other distribution services. Like, I think Steam Greenlight is great because it gives people a chance to vote on these games and hear about games they like. For instance, there are people that have their pulse on indie games, right? They read specific forums and that sort of thing. But for other people, the only way they're going to hear about these games is through Greenlight. It's a chance for products to have a great trailer that can sell them and reach an audience they wouldn't otherwise do. And if you're really not happy with it, and you think that it's a bad thing for indie games, there are other ones, like Desura is like the best indie games distribution service. So there are other options out there. Steam is not the only option.
Yeah, I think it's a benefit to have discovery tools like that. Like if I reach into my phone and I open up the App Store and I'm just like, oh, here's what they've deemed are the best or the most popular, whatever they're spotlighting, it's the only way I'm going to see that stuff, right? I'm not going to go digging through thousands of indie games and shitty little apps to find some little thing.
Why shouldn't it be a popularity contest?
Of course, everything is. We could go on IGN right now. We could pick a game that no one knows about. We could write about it every day for the next 6 months, and that game would sell 100,000 times more than it ever would before that. Even if it was shit.
The power of Altano.
The final disappointment is something close to your heart, Colin. Yeah. It's Mega Man's 25th birthday, and nobody came.
Yep.
Capcom is like, it's been the 25th anniversary of Mega Man all year long, and Capcom hasn't done hardly anything.
New Mega Man game coming out for free!
In December, in the twilight of the year, they finally say, oh yes, we have a fan-made game coming out.
This is like the drunken stepdad coming home the day after Christmas. He's like, I got you some shit.
From the airport.
Yeah, from the airport. Shop. It's one of those fucking globes. With the
it's embarrassing.
How many companies have... beloved game franchises that date back to the NES.
Right?
Right? That's right? Pretty rare.
Yeah, I mean, you got a company like Sony, right? Like, and they're putting together, they put together PlayStation All-Stars. Like, yeah. Don't you care about these characters?
These characters are like 10 years old.
Not
like,
really.
Okay.
Capcom's like, sitting there with Mega Man. It's like one of the most iconic video game characters of all time. They're like, gives a shit.
Yeah, they don't understand what they have with Mega Man. I think that's pretty clear. I mean, I still think that when Inafune left, I don't think it was clearly on good terms. I think that they frankly canceled Legends 3 and Universe despite them. And despite that team. And I think that like they don't know what to do with it now. You know, you like Universe was almost done. Clements played it. You know, Legends 3 was like they released a playable demo of Legends 3, and people were gonna like have this. They were gonna do this really cool thing where you kind of give input, and they keep releasing it, and they.
Yeah.
And
we were this fucking close to living in a world where we got a brand new NES Mega Man game every year. Yeah. They did 9, they did 10, and then why didn't just do 11? Make him fight Couchman, give him a dog that turns into a bicycle, and then seven more of those, and every year, here's my money.
Oh my god, I would kill for that.
Every year.
I mean, the thing about Mega Man 9 and 10 that frustrate me is that they admitted that those games were profitable, so there's no reason for them to not.
Of course they were profitable, they were NES games in
2011. Well, I mean, to be fair, like to retroactively teach people how to use those tools, and I'm sure it was like much more complicated than people give them credit for.
Plus, not as complicated as to make a single level in Lost Planet 4.
Of course not. But yeah, I mean, you guys kind of alluded to it, and it's funny. You know, they have this PC game that's a fan-made game.
Yeah.
That's been floating around for a while, and then sometime in November, someone's like, you know, guys, like Mega Man came out in Japan like December 17th, and we don't have any games for Mega Man's 25th anniversary. And they're like, oh, well, contact this guy.
Let's go on DeviantArt, see if someone drew something. It's like, for us.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm gonna review that game next week. The game looks fun. It looks like Mega Man.
Yes,
it looks like a very sterile Mega Man game, like the original Mega Man.
You know why it looks great? Because Mega Man fans love Mega Man.
Yeah, especially 8-bit.
So give us something.
But yeah, they screwed the pooch with Mega Man. And while they said that they're gonna have more announcements and do all these things, whatever, like I want to see the proof. We need X9, we need Mega Man 11, I don't know why you canceled Legends 3, and I keep talking about it and some people think I'm crazy, reboot Mega Man.
This would have been the perfect time to reboot it, right?
Call it Mega Man. I talked about it on Podcast Beyond this week, call it Mega Man, have it be like an open world game.
You have to kill the 9 bosses, you gain their powers, it writes itself.
Yes, it's so easy.
I envisioned it like Zelda.
They had Splash Woman in the last one.
Yeah,
Splash Woman.
Yeah, Splash Woman was awesome.
And they're Sheep just Man. Straight, they can do anything they want.
Sheep Man. I envision it like to play like Zelda. I said remake the original Mega Man. You know, two scientists work on these robots. One scientist turns and tries to turn them all. One resists. So you play as that robot. There are like 6 dungeons or whatever that you have to find around this world. Mm-hmm. You go and fight them in any order you want. You get their powers. It's like really dark, really gritty, like really apocalyptic.
And then you're sitting there at the end. You go, oh man, we need a last level. What do we do? Fight them all over again.
Are we saying like super serious Mega Man?
Yeah.
Where it shows him like ripping the arm off of the guy he defeats.
Yeah, that'd be badass.
And reattaching it, and it's like violent.
I'd rather see them try to do something than they would try to ignore the fact that they have Mega Man and that Inafune grew tired of their bullshit, frankly.
Yeah.
And that's why, like Mega Man fans are very clear. They're very passionate. You release Mega Man 9. Everyone's like, oh, they'll buy that. They just want it. And no one will buy it again. Mega Man 10 came out, sold just as well. You know?
Yeah.
It's the same thing we talked about with old school Castlevania. Like, what are you doing, Konami?
To be fair, I think Nintendo just passed the 25th anniversary of Zelda and Metroid, and those were great celebrations. Remember those? Nope.
Yeah.
I don't think they know what to do with Mega Man. I think that they're like, we don't know, we don't know what to do.
Should probably hire you.
Mega Man.
You have good ideas.
Yeah, there's your idea. You know what, Capcom? Take that idea. Reboot Mega Man on the Mega Man 1 story in an open world, dungeon crawling kind of game like Zelda. There you go. Millions of copies sold. You're welcome, Colin Moriarty.
I would play the hell out of that game.
Me too.
Those were interesting. They were thought-provoking lists. I like those.
Yeah, it was good.
Some good discussion. That completes our final game sweep of the year.
Wow.
Yeah, that wraps us up. We're going to take a break over the holidays. We'll return in a few weeks. But I hope everybody has a very happy, very safe holidays. This is IGN GameScoop, Ben Rout.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.